Welcome to another episode of the Man Treks. I'm Sarah.
And I'm JJ.
Excuse me. Sorry, I suddenly had.
Welcome to
our podcast.
That's just good banter right there.
I'm sorry. Anyways, don't say this is the way place where we go to get away from the things that have a point, because I actually really don't like that tagline.
Nope, I'll just let you say it, and then I'll say, no, this is a commentary on Christian life and... What was it?
Commentary on Christian life and culture from a pastor's wife and her sidekick.
Yes, that's our original tagline that we got away from during the dark days, and then we've come back for our 100th episode.
I forgot this is our 100th episode. I don't even have anything planned. I feel so underprepared.
Nope. There's no reason. I don't have anything. This is our centennial episode. Honestly, I don't think 100 is that special, because 104 is 2 years, right? If there's 52 weeks and we do it weekly, 104 is 2 years. But then we've skipped some weeks, and you know, so it's just kind of like, I don't know, 100 doesn't mean too much other than just that's a lot. So that's crazy. But yeah, so today is our centennial episode, so that's cool. Kind of fun. And that's all I got in terms of housekeeping. So are you ready to approach the news desk?
Yes, I am.
What do you got?
Strange trash plucked from New Jersey beaches.
Ugh.
Just an overview of all the random things that wash up / are uncovered.
It's not a nice way to talk about New Yorkers.
Voodoo doll, not New York, New Jersey. Voodoo doll, whoopee cushion, denture powder, among bizarre trash plucked from
voodoo
New Jersey.
How do they know it's a voodoo doll? Has it got pins all sticking in it?
It says, Jersey Shore Beach season is almost here, and if last year is any indication, it will soon be time to pack the voodoo dolls, whoopee cushions, zip ties, and denture powder. Those are just a few of the bizarre items plucked from the sands of New Jersey's beaches last year by volunteers with the Clean Ocean Action Environmental Group.
Gross.
So 3,700 volunteers picked up and disposed of 176,000 items along the state's 127-mile coastline. So most of it was mundane and common. But there are some oddities. For example, a 50-pound bag of rice, a baby Yoda doll, a severed Barbie head, and then there was the food fryer. Who even brings a food fryer to the beach, much less leaves it behind? Also left seaside were boxer shorts, a bra, a bikini, fake eyelashes, fishnet stockings, a jock strap, along with a pregnancy test, result unknown.
Ew.
So gross.
I do think the air, what was it you said?
Air fryer.
An air fryer and the... Shoot, what was the other thing that was kind of funny? The bag of rice.
Like,
what is that?
A 50-pound bag of rice.
I love it. I'm curious. I want to know more.
Oh, my goodness. It says Cindy Ziff is the director of the Clean Action Ocean Action, and it has carried out the beach sweeps beginning and end of each beach season since 1985. They've collected nearly 8.5 million items of trash.
Oh, my gosh.
Recycling what can be reprocessed. Hard to fathom, says Cindy, from the quirky to the funny to the really just plain gross. You can't make this stuff up. So nearly 80% of the haul is plastic. Bottle caps, lids, food, candy wrappers, bags, miscellaneous, cigarette butts, and then there's 10,000 plastic straws or beverage stirrers. But some are truly head-scratching or particularly strange.
Yeah.
There is an ample supply of auto parts, automobile gas tank, 4 car batteries, bumper, an air compressor, and 24 tires.
4 car batteries. What?
They've also found electric razors, a container of body hair remover, denture cleansing powder, scissors, and a full-length mirror, a dustpan, a Philadelphia Eagles banner, 2 crock pots with lids, and a small refrigerator. There was also leftover food, 6 pineapples and a coconut, a fortune cookie, a can of tuna, and a box of Valentine's candy.
I feel like a fortune cookie is not worth mentioning.
I know. I was like, boxes of candy, maybe, but a fortune cookie?
Yeah, I got the fridge and the mirror and the big giant, you know, tires and car parts. Oh, and this little fortune cookie. That counts too.
The Valentine's candy says the last one proves that the Jersey Shore beach sweeps are like a box of chocolates. You never know what you're going to get.
That's gross.
It's gross.
That's so gross.
So gross. So I don't think I will ever go to the Jersey Shore.
The world is such a strange place.
People are weird. But the air fryer.
Well, I'd be sad to lose that. Air fryers are awesome.
Like,
but what do you do?
Where would you even plug it in?
I'm assuming, don't you think,
I'm assuming a lot of these things are washed up from places, or like someone dumped it somewhere, or like maybe it
fell off a boat. Some of it
fallen off something. You
know, if I had a fridge on my boat or a yacht or something.
I'm mad at my boyfriend, and I live in the third floor apartment next to the beach. So I chuck it out onto the beach. I
threw his razor in the river.
The ocean.
And washed out to the sea.
So bizarre. But that's
so funny. Mm-hmm. Very strange. Wow. All right. So both of my stories are a little bit sad, but also fascinating and really kind of funny. Okay. So this one is kind of like a real life Shutter Island. I think that's what I'm going to describe it as. It's sad, but crazy and kind of cool. And justice was served in the end, sort of.
Okay.
All right. So enter Matthew David Cairns. In 1988, Cairns worked with a man. This is a tale of identity theft gone wrong, mixed with romance and love. And it's very crazy. Okay, so Cairns, Michael David Cairns, worked with a man named William Donald Woods at a hot dog cart in New Mexico. 1988. Okay. So back in the 80s, this guy worked with another guy on a hot dog cart.
Sure.
I assume they took different shifts and they just sold hot dogs. Cairns left that job. He stole William Donald Woods' identity. Okay, so he worked with this guy for a little while, and then he said, I'm going to take this guy's identity. Okay?
For no reason?
Yeah, to get money, right?
Okay.
So it started off as a run-of-the-mill identity theft. According to the records, in 1990, he obtained a Colorado driver's license using Woods' name and birth date, which he used to open a bank account and begin writing bad checks. He used Woods' names to buy a car that he never paid for. So he racked up like $200,000 in debt with this guy's name. Then in 1994, something unexpected happens. Cairns fell in love. He met a woman and fell in love.
Okay.
Problem is, she knew him as William Donald Woods. So this guy, Michael David Cairns, was that his name? Michael David? Matthew David Cairns. Fell in love with a woman who knew him as William Donald Woods.
Okay.
I'm just going to call that guy Woods. Okay. But how do you tell the girl that you love that your Woods is a guy that you're...
Right.
You stole his identity.
Wow.
So instead, this Cairns guy committed to being Woods. He said, I'm just going to throw away my old identity. I am now Woods. This is my new name. So they got married. They have a child together. The baby's name, last name is Woods. Like, whoa. He started a life. He started, like, this identity theft thing became his real life. He managed to obtain a copy of the birth certificate using information he got on a genealogy site. Then he went into IT at a hospital, and he was starting to make, he got a great job making $147,000 a year. He got a mortgage, made investments, planned for retirements, paid his bills, paid his taxes, all under the name William Donald Woods. So he took over this man's identity. Yeah. The real Woods never got wise to it because he was living homeless in LA. So the real Woods was going through his own struggles.
Whoa.
And so he was kind of off the grid.
Yeah.
While this other guy was living a life in his name. Okay.
Whoa, this trip.
Somehow along the way, the homeless man, who's the real guy, found out that there's $200,000 in debt under his name, and he didn't want to have to pay it. So he goes to the bank that's holding these loans, and he's like, this is fraud. I'm not that person. This is bad. He had his real Social Security card and his name, but he didn't know the answers to any of the security questions on the man's mortgage and bank account and all this stuff that's been going on for decades. So the police were called on the real guy.
My brain is like, what?
I know. This whole story is... So a subsequent investigation begins. So Cairns, the fake guy, sends in copies of the birth certificate, Social Security that he had illegally obtained. He also could answer the security questions from the bank. He claimed the real Woods was actually Matthew David Cairns. So he's like, no, that guy's Cairns, not me. So they arrested the real guy for claiming to be himself.
My gosh.
Yeah. The real Woods maintained all throughout the trial that he was the real William Donald Woods.
My brain would be so fried.
Isn't it this insane? So in 2021, a judge ruled him mentally incompetent to stand trial. They're like, you're just a crazy person. They sent him to a mental facility where they pumped the poor guy full of psychotropic drugs for 2 years.
Oh, my gosh.
This is where it gets all kind of Shutter Island-y, right? He got out in 2023 out of this facility, and he still dug in his heels and he said, no, 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 I'm Woods. Like, he never changed his story. He always said, I'm Woods. So then he went to Karen's employer, University of Iowa Hospital, where this guy was working in IT.
Right.
And the University of Iowa agreed to look into the IT guy. So University of Iowa police detective Ian Mallory opened up an investigation into the case. They found out Mallory found the biological father listed on the birth certificate, and they both have a copy of the birth certificate. He goes to the father, gets some DNA, and tests it up against this guy who everyone says is a crazy person. And the test proved that Woods was actually the man's son.
Wow.
They never tested the DNA in this identity theft case. An Iowan college cop did the simplest, most elegant solution while... the other people imprisoned the wrong guy and put him in a mental hospital.
Oh my gosh, that's crazy.
When he was presented with the evidence, the fake guy, he said, my life is over, everything is gone. He confessed to the prolonged identity theft. He lived for 30 years as this guy. In federal court, he pled guilty. He's facing up to 30 years in prison.
Wow.
Isn't that insane?
I can't believe that. Well, I can't believe that it worked in his favor at first.
How do you get away with something like that? I can't decide if it's Shutter Island or Catch Me If You Can. You know,
it's a Leonardo DiCaprio movie. It's a great performance, Leo.
It's just...
That is so trippy.
Isn't that just insane?
And awful.
Started a stolen identity, but then you mix in a romance in there. And because most people, you steal identity, you rack up a bunch of debt, you buy the stuff you want. Then you ditch it. Yeah, you just ditch it. And I'm not that person. What are you talking about?
That's just...
But to hang on to the name. And then a judge declared him mentally... The real guy,
I would be like, oh... Gosh. I would sue that all those people for everything they were worth.
Yep.
Oh my gosh.
Yep. On that poor lady and her son, like they have a kid and, you're not Woods? Like, what?
Wow.
Well, and it seems like other than the identity theft, he didn't do that much wrong. Like, it was bad for him to do that. And he racked up some debt, you know, he bought a car he never paid for, that kind of stuff. But otherwise, he paid his taxes. He got a real job. He did that job. It's like, how on earth is this possible?
Wrap my mind around that.
Crazy.
And where was this?
Started in 1988 in California. They had a hot dog. No, sorry. New Mexico.
New Mexico.
That was where they had the hot dog van.
Wow.
Then the real guy was homeless on the streets of LA for 30 years. And then the other guy was... He went and lived in California with a life he had built. Wow. Crazy.
My story is far less.
I was like, I have to tell you about this crazy story.
So this just is. Oregon truck crash releases 77,000 salmon into the wrong body of water.
No. So 77,000?
Officials attempting to repopulate a river with salmon hit a setback when a truck crash released 77,000 of the fish into the wrong body of water.
Wow. What will that do to the ecosystem?
That's what I want to know. The Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife said the tanker truck was transporting about 102,000 spring Chinook smolts, which are adolescent salmon, to release into the Imnaha River when it rolled over alongside Looking Glass Creek, a tributary of the Grand Ronde River. The crash caused 77,000 fish to wind up in the creek far from their intended destination.
Okay, so it was a crash. It's not like they accidentally dumped them in the wrong place.
Like the truck, it's a huge tanker, but apparently was carrying
100,000
fish.
Wow, and most of them got
and
out.
Most of them, yeah, about, yeah.
Can they not catch them again? Of them. Scoop them up, put them back in a tanker?
It doesn't say whether or not there's any kind of, that they were able to catch them at all, but because apparently it says that they usually are released into the river for tribal and sport harvest.
Yeah.
Also to supplement the wild population, which is apparently considered threatened, but it doesn't say anything about what that's going to do to the area or if they were even able to catch any of them.
I wonder if it's a good thing.
I don't know.
I mean, it's a bummer for the people who wanted them in the other place.
I wonder if they're ever normally in this tributary.
Yeah.
This It's just so weird. But I just found that so ironic. Like, oops, Jimmy was driving, took turn too sharp. Up, oh, there go the salmon, and they're in a different river.
Do you remember Independence Day, where in the beginning he's a crop duster and he's drunk or whatever, so he crop dusts the wrong field,
yeah,
or whatever, and he's like yelling at him. He's like, no, don't do it, and he dumps his payload like on the wrong field. Mm-hmm. And it's like, I thought maybe it was like that, like the guy pulls up and pulls the plug and drains the fish into the wrong place, but this was like actual like crash,
actual
like,
accident. Yeah,
yeah, that's worse.
Just a bad
better?
Day, honestly.
Know. At least it wasn't an intentional.
There were no injuries. Like the driver was.
Oh, just, well, that's good.
Like he was just minor injuries.
Maybe so, I wish I could think of a fish pun right now. Something about fish trout getting flopped, hurt. Something. Ah, never
You're
mind.
You're good at this.
I'm not.
You should do it professionally.
Yeah. Nah. All right, I have another sad story. I like your stories because they're at least like
they're
funny.
Balanced.
Yeah, you know, they're not like horrifying. So the last story was kind of the big one. That was the crazy story. But this one, Arizona mom allegedly used a taser to wake up her son for Easter morning church. Get up, it's Jesus's day.
No.
Yes. Now, her claim is that she didn't use the taser. Her son claimed she did use the taser. She said, you're supposed to put God first, and that's all I was trying to do. Sharon Dobbins told a local news station.
And where is this happening?
Arizona. So in
Arizona.
Right. An Arizona mom used she's accused of using a stun gun to wake up her teenage son for Easter service. Teenager, he didn't want to go to church. She said, you're going to church. So now she posits, or she says, I had the taser, and I just clicked it and made the buzzing noise to scare him, to motivate him. I never actually used it on him. He claimed she tased me.
Is there evidence that she tased him?
Let's see. She was arrested on Sunday by police, charged with one count of child abuse with intent to harm, according to the Arizona Republic. She's 40 years old. She was released from jail hours after her arrest. She made her initial court appearance on Monday. She said, I said, get up, it's Jesus's day.
No, your taser said, get up, it's Jesus's day.
So the son, allegedly she applied the taser to her son on the leg. She says, I just made the spark to scare him. I didn't touch him. I made the noise with the taser, but I did not use it on my son. I don't think I did anything wrong because you're supposed to put God first. And that's all I was trying to do, is to tell my kids to put God first.
Violence?
Yeah. So the kid says she got me on the leg, and he pointed to two burn marks on his leg, like little tiny spots. So maybe she did that. I think we can all agree it's a terrible, terrible idea.
It's a terrible idea to threaten, even if you were just pretending. Not a great.
No. And there's a couple different articles. One article I read was like, there were cousins over, and she was trying to get them all to go, and the cousins corroborated the story. They called the police. The son said, I'm calling the police. And she's like, fine, you go ahead. They'll make you go to church. And the police show up. And then as they're telling the story, they start arresting her. And they were like, ma'am, you have to come with us. And she's like, why? What did I do? I didn't do anything wrong. And then it's like, yes, you did. You cannot tase.
Wow.
And I say a child, but he is a teenager. Like he's my guess is
how old does it say?
It just says teenager. It doesn't say, because he's a minor, so they don't give us any details. So he's under 18, sure. But teenage son. But then apparently he called the police. They arrest her or whatever. And then at the court case, the son was like hugging her and this is crazy. I don't want to prosecute. He dropped charges. So she didn't get charged or anything. I think, I don't know. It sounded like reading the article. It was like, kind of sounds like the kid was like, I'm going to call the police on you because this is crazy, which it is crazy. But then I think he didn't realize how bad it gets if you call the police. Like, mom's in big trouble.
Yeah.
Well, and she's not allowed to have custody of them for a little while. They have to stay with friends at their aunt's house or something for like a period of 20 days or something like that, because she's under investigation for abuse or whatever.
Wow.
And I think the kid realized, like, oh, wait, you mean she doesn't just get in a little trouble? It's like, no, this is very serious. Like, if your accusation is false, or if it's real, I mean, either way, this is a big deal. So, yeah, it's fascinating.
That's crazy.
But just absolutely the wrong.
Don't even joke about it.
Not
even joke about it.
Nope. Why does she have a taser?
Yeah, that's actually a really good question.
Why is that in the home?
Why does she have a taser, and why is she threatening
her
child with it when he won't go to church?
No, I don't know anything about real tasers. Like, if maybe they have like light settings versus big settings, but there's really no setting.
I just want to put it on the get my kid at church setting. Which one is that? No? Okay.
She either threatened to or actually tased her son. I'm going to go ahead and say,
that she needed Jesus more than the son needed Jesus, if this is the case, because you're considering shooting your kid with a taser.
It's terrible. I just made a joke last Sunday about how many of you acted unchristlike getting your kids ready for church, right? Talking about how we hurry our kids, and a lot of people, you know, there's kind of this frantic chaos of Sunday morning. I did not know anyone would take it to that level.
No, someone did. It's bad.
It's bad. It's very bad. We need to run away from this
story.
We do.
We need a new...
Are you ready for Sponsor Your Life?
I think so.
While you're thinking, I'll intro these because I forget we should like remind people in case we get new listeners. Sure. Sponsor Your Life is one of those things where our podcast is this teeny tiny little podcast, and we love to make it, but we don't have listenership to get actual sponsors. You have to have like thousands of downloads for every episode, and we don't have any of that. And so what we do is we pump up sponsors. We make up things that sponsor our lives, things that we would advertise if they paid us, but nobody's paying us, so we're just going to pump them up ourselves. So what's sponsoring your life today?
The weather.
I love that. That's so good.
Yesterday and today, it's a little windy. It's windier today than it was yesterday, but yeah. I'll take 70 degrees. It's nice. It's welcome. Yeah. In Michigan, this is fake spring. Like, this is, you know, the fake out summer-ish spring, but yeah. It's so nice, and I love it. So it's a good day. It's actually been a good couple days, so it'll get cold and rainy again, but...
But for now, soak up that sun while it's here.
Absolutely.
I like this about Michigan. Like, I just feel like we know that especially like March and April, maybe into May a little bit, the sun just doesn't poke out very often. And so when it does, Michiganders just like out of their homes. Like, we just fill up our neighborhood and everybody's out for a walk.
We were all out in the yard yesterday and today. Yesterday because of the eclipse, but today because of the
world. Oh, yeah, the end of the world. Came and went without event.
How about you?
Sponsor My Life is a movie that we just watched recently. I know it's been out forever, but it finally came to like able to rent digitally because we don't leave our home.
We don't really go to movies or anything.
No,
like that.
Well, especially not a PG-13 movie, but this is Ballad and Songbirds and Snakes. And you've read the book. Mm-hmm. I haven't gotten around to the book yet. I really enjoyed it. The only complaint I had at the end was I wanted more. Like, I think I could have done a whole trilogy because I think they created really compelling characters that were like really intense. The bad guys were really bad and the good guys were really interesting. And I don't know. I thought it was good for what it was. It's kind of a prequel series, but I was left a little bit like, no, more, you know, there's loose ends and things they didn't finish. Almost to the point of, I wonder if they will make more.
Yeah, I'd be curious too. I mean, it's obviously the book is like standalone. It's a prequel to the Hunger Games series, but yeah, I could see that them doing like a.
I just enjoy that series. Film. There is the excitement of the surface level plot, which is very interesting, but I love the deeper levels and the commentary and about, you know, about hope and about. Rebellion and standing for things and standing for others and the way our actions affect the people around us. And there's so much depth to those. And I really enjoy thinking about it and puzzling those out. And so, yeah, that was a fun movie to watch. And we hadn't watched a new movie that was good in a long time.
You've watched a lot of movies.
Yeah, we watched lots of new movies that are terrible.
It's true. I usually concede to watching a lot of movies that are... Mm-hmm. Subpar.
Yes, and that's why we do so much reruns, because we know they're good. So
it's true.
So yeah, that's definitely Ballad of Songbirds and Snakes was sponsored my life today.
Nice.
All right, you ready for the hot topic?
Sure.
All right, so I was inspired by this horrible story of this woman
inspired by a horrible story. Oh my gosh.
No, so I was thinking about it because obviously, okay, I think we can all agree the woman with the Easter and taser and all of that, like
the Easter taser.
It's the Easter taser. It's absolutely
you must get just get chocolate. You didn't have to do that.
It's horrifying to use a taser on your child. Yes, no matter even if they're an adult or you know, like that's just
it's horrible to use a taser on any other human being.
Yeah, unless it's like some sort of self defense. Yeah, yep. I just think there's not a lot of justification for that ever. Self-defense from violence. Okay, yes. But anything else, especially to motivate someone. But
oh, my gosh.
That got me thinking about when is it okay as a parent to force your kid to do something or to not? Because these kids, so like, this is church, right? The mom wanted her kid to go to church on Easter. And that's, I think, a pretty common impulse, especially for religious folks. If you are churchy and you go to church and you want to go to church, you want your family to come with you. And Easter is one of those Sundays where sometimes family will come with you, you know, like your kids might say, I'm not going to church all the other weeks, but on Easter I'll go with you. So I could see where the desire was, but that got me thinking more broadly about like, okay, but what about sports? You know, can you force your kid to do sports? Or what about instruments? And I mean, what about school? Your kids have to go to school, and it's like, is it only okay to force your kid to do stuff that is legally required by the state, or where can you draw the line? And so I was curious, did you have any first insights on that? Because I did throw it up on social media, we got some responses as well.
I don't know, I think obviously you're their parents, so you have their best interests in mind, and I get where this lady's coming from with the whole church thing, but like, you can't be so legalistic that you start like forgetting the reason why. Like, I just feel like you've kind of lost focus here by tasing your kid into church.
Yeah,
like,
I know that's
you've kind of crossed some lines. And honestly, like, I get it. I mean, I was always a super rule follower. So when my mom would play the whole "Well, we go to church because that's what we do" card, I hated that answer. And honestly, I could have thought of a better answer. But I was a teenager, and it was like, but I don't need to go to church. Yep. I mean, I'm still a Christian whether or not I go to church. And my mom's response was always, I'm the parent, and I said, we're going, so we're going. And so I just kind of let it go, and I didn't bother pushing it.
Yep.
But I do think, like, obviously we have the reason and the logic, and we know it, and we can explain it to our kid till we're blue in the face. But our kid's mentality is, well, I just don't want to go.
Yeah.
I mean, I totally get it, because there are things as an adult that I just don't even want to do. Like, you can explain it to me and why it's good for me and why I should be doing it, but if I don't want to do it, I'm not going to do it. And I mean, yes, you're their parent, but like, I don't know, with teenagers especially, and obviously I'm speaking as a parent of not teenagers.
That's what's hard.
My oldest is 7. So this is out of my realm of experience. So obviously there are those who would speak to it better, but I feel like I'd be willing to, you know, discuss this with my child. Like I'd open it up for the discussion. I wouldn't just yell at them and tell them, hey, we're going to do it because I said so. Like, that is the worst. I feel like that's just will against will, and someone's going to lose, you know. But like, I'd love to talk with you. Like, why do you think that it's a better idea for you not to go? Let's talk about it. Okay. But I think that that's wrong, and I think that we should go to church because obviously we need to be in community with one another, and it's, you know, beneficial for your growth as a Christian. But like, I don't know, with anything even, like, I'd love to, you know, talk with my kid and like find out what's their reasoning for it. And if it's just a simple thing, like, I don't want to do it, like,
it's not a good enough reason.
That's not a good enough reason for me. And it depends on what it is. Like, on certain things, like, I'll push, like, if it's something that's really going to benefit them, or it's something that's pretty necessary. But if it's something like that doesn't make that much difference, that's not that big a deal, like, okay, that's fine, we don't have to do it.
It's interesting because I think about, so for me, music is a huge part of your life and my life. We play a lot of instruments, and it's enriched our life greatly. Like, I love, every now and then, I don't do it a ton, but maybe once or twice a week, pull off the guitar off the wall, and we play and we sing, and it's just good, and that's really enjoyable. And so I'm very grateful that I was taught at least the elementary principles of music theory. You know, I learned my scales on the piano. I'm not like a great pianist or anything. I don't still play very often, but it's there, and that's in my bank, and I'm grateful to have that skill set. So it's like, we haven't started any of our kids on music yet, but eventually I do expect them, I would like them to take up an instrument, mostly because I think it's a lifelong skill that you will enjoy having. But then I think about, you know, sports, you know, like, remember when I was coaching Amos's team, there was the little girl, well, actually we had several, and they're like 4 years old, and they cry, they don't want to play, but the parents are like, making them play. You're gonna do this. And there's different levels of it. There was the mom who said, okay, that's fine. You can sit by me. And she just sat on the side. And then there was the other mom or dad or whoever.
Who wasn't going to take that.
You get out there right now. And they like kind of yell or scold, you know, and it's like,
yep.
There's a range there. Yes. And I don't know. I'm torn because it's, I do think it's important to push your children to try things. And I think your insight on the age thing is totally valid. It's easy for us to speak because our children are still very much controlled and directed by us because mm-hmm. they're young. They're the oldest is 7. And so it's like we still make a lot of
they have some autonomy, but for the most part, like they're still growing. We choose for them. Yeah.
But as they get older into middle school, into high school, they become, you know, that there's this murky relationship of like we're helping you be your own autonomous human being and make mm-hmm. your own decisions, but also you're still living under our house and we are still molding and shaping and pouring into you. Huh?
That's interesting.
Live under our house. Yep, under our roof. That's what I meant. You live in the basement now.
They live.
Like a troll. Get in a basement. You don't go to church. We make you.
I think that's true.
I hesitate to make big statements about like teenagers because it's kind of like people who don't have kids talking about, well, it's true. I'm never gonna spank. My only experience with teenagers is that
I was a teenager, but I haven't raised a teenager yet. So, you know, for those who have teenagers, they're far better to speak to this than I.
I was just listening to a podcast where there's an older guy who his children are adults and he has like 2 or 3 very young grandchildren. So his kids are probably our age.
Okay.
And he was talking about how there's an increasing humility that parents develop. He's like, the longer you are a parent, the more humble you are. Because in the beginning, you think you know how to do everything. And you're like, I'm going to try all these methods and I'm going to use all this stuff and I'm going to be so much smarter than my parents and grandparents were. But then as you raise a human and they are of free will and you know what I mean? And it's like, and then you realize that each kid is different and the method that worked mm-hmm. for one is not going to work on the other. And you have to be fluid and mm-hmm. flexible. And he's like, and I actually really appreciated that. I was like he's like, being a parent is a lifelong process of growing in humility.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, ooh, I like that.
That's why I always stress like, yeah, I'm not saying having kids is for everyone. And I'm not saying everyone needs to have children. But I think you grow more than you ever, ever thought you could. And you will be pushed to become a better person if you allow that growth to happen.
Yeah.
More than I ever thought possible by having children.
Oh, my gosh. It shows all your weak spots.
The more children I have. But I could agree to that, like growing in humility. Like I remember when we had just the one kid and I was like, oh, this is so hard.
We got this.
I'm going to do this right and I'm going to have all the answers and I was doing all the stuff and I had all these methods in my head and everything.
We had so many people complimenting us and they were like, you guys are doing such a great job. You're just amazing parents. And
and now like our fourth child, like just
fifth child.
Oh my gosh, no, I'm talking about our fourth child who has been giving us so much trouble lately.
I see.
I come in and he's sitting on the counter going, washing my hair, Mom.
Gosh.
He's got the soap in his hair while he was supposed to be brushing his teeth. And I'm like, well, we're dunking your head in the shower now. I just feel like there's, you know, you do. I finally mastered it. And then it's like, nope, gotta relearn again. It's just.
I do think. Well, and I think there's an evolution in what parenting is. Because mm-hmm. it used to be. That there was more violence, you know, it was like children obey me under threat of violence. Like
it was about control,
spanking,
and keeping
you know, beating or whatever. And it was like children obeyed out of fear almost. Mm-hmm. And I am glad we've moved away from that.
Yeah.
However, we have swung all the way to the other side where there's like, I'm begging my children to respect me. You know, and it's like
there's a balance somewhere.
Yeah, not saying that. I feel like the need to repeat over and over. Please don't ever taser or threaten to taser your children.
Oh my gosh, no.
That's well outside the bounds. That's why I brought that article because it was funny how ridiculous and insane that is. And I'm very much so hoping that she didn't actually. She just threatened. Like I hope that's what really happened.
I really hope so.
You know?
I really hope so.
It does sound like there was reconciliation in terms of the son hugging the mom and. Both of them realizing that their behavior was well outside of mm-hmm. what is appropriate. And I think they're still dealing with consequences and will be for a while. The mom's going to have the state peering in on her for a long time now. You can't do that. But I do think that there's an element of like when a kid is a teenager in your house, you are still responsible for them.
Yep.
Like absolutely. On a legal level. And so you are still, you as much as they are little adults, they're also still children.
Your kids.
And there is this kind of dimension of, and so I guess I like the explain it to them method, but when that fails, I do wonder what to do. You know, it's like, I explain to them why it's good and I like it.
I'm not saying like it's going to be a foolproof. I mean, kids aren't logical. Adults aren't logical. Like,
I know I wasn't.
I wasn't either. So I'm not expecting it to be an easy process. I'm not even expecting that to work.
I see that a lot in myself. My dad is a very logical person and they tried so hard to like explain things to me. And I was very irrational teenager.
I was
completely driven by my emotions. Yeah. And I look back and I'm like, oh my gosh, my parents were totally right. I was being ridiculous. And a little bit, I'm like, I see that in me. Mm-hmm. I'm talking to my children. And I'm like, I know you're making an emotionally based decision. That is the wrong decision. And I'm trying to show you how it's hurtful to yourself or to others. But they still are like, nope, I still want to do the selfish thing.
They're acting completely on emotion.
It's hard to explain. And I
think that part of their brain isn't even developed. Like,
yeah, I guess maybe that's my big point, is that this whole parenting thing is crazy challenging. I do think more parents should make their kids do stuff. I think we've swung so far that parents are like,
so far to the do what you do. Well, he doesn't want to.
Well, and I guess one thing that annoys me or just frustrates me is how parents choose which things they force. Like,
that's true.
Your children go to school. You don't say, well, they didn't feel like it, so I don't force them to go to school. You force your kid to go to school. There's no question on that. And sporting events. Parents seem to be very comfortable forcing their kid.
Parents are fine pushing their kids to do everything single extracurricular imaginable.
And yet, like for me, when I think about like coming to church, well, I just didn't want to force it. And I'm like, okay, but you're comfortable to force it for every other area. You know, like you're going to practice this instrument we bought because it costs so much money and we paid for these lessons and you're going to do it. Mm-hmm. And it like... So
there's
I don't know.
Yeah, there's not a consistency there.
No, I think they think of church as like, well, I don't want them. And I'm like, but you're not applying that standard across the thing. I did have a buddy respond on Threads, or we're not doing Twitter anymore, on Threads. So I posted it and I said, okay, what do you guys think about this? And I thought this was well nuanced. He said, unfortunately, I think the right response, so this is coming from Joel Faust. It says, I think the right response highly depends on the context, although, so it's activities versus school versus church, even in the same kid in the same family, you're going to get different responses. Yeah. For activities, we generally made it clear that if they started something, they made a commitment to that something.
Yeah.
So they have to do it at least a season or whatever's reasonably defined as a season. Mm-hmm. So they can't quit partway through just if they get bored. And I was like, I think that's always valid. Yeah, yeah. It's like you've committed to it. We wanted them to feel free to try new things, but not so free that they left coaches or instructors in the lurch who had planned on their continued participation.
Sense of responsibility is important.
And then he says, also not so free that we were constantly shelling out money for new stuff like shoes, equipment, instruments, whatever, every other month. Mm. And I think that that's important. I don't think that's something kids factor in. I know I didn't think about it, but it's like, if we bought you an instrument that costs $800, we need you to make good use of it. You got to do 2 years or
it's
whatever.
It's like when people are like, oh, my kid plays hockey. Hockey's a really expensive sport to play. The equipment is really expensive. So if my kid was like, I'm going to do this, I'm like, okay, so we're going to do it for a couple seasons until you can't wear that stuff anymore. Right. And then you're done. Cause like, you know, you've expressed interest. We're not just going to do a season and then be like, oh, I don't want to do that anymore because I don't. And it's like, or maybe we resell the stuff, whatever. But like, some things are a big commitment and you have to be aware of the repercussions of what you're getting into.
And I think that's valid. And that's one of those things where it's like, you can explain that to a kid and they may not care. Mm-hmm. They might say, I don't care if it costs you a bunch of money. I'm not doing it. And it's like, yeah, but this is where we're going to force you, you know, like, you've done this, we've made this commitment.
Yep.
And, you know, we spent the money already on the instrument or the equipment or I like the coach part. Like, you've made a commitment. You're not going to leave
them. Other people are counting.
Yeah. Other people are counting on you. I think that's a good, that's a character building thing.
It
know?
Is. Yeah. Yeah.
And so I did like that part. I was like, yeah, that makes good sense. That it does. I like that. But I do worry about that. I just think, the unreasonableness of a teenager can be a really challenging thing. At least, and I'm using myself as an example. I was a pretty unreasonable kid. Like, if I wanted something, I think we all were
to a certain extent. Even me, like, I would consider myself to be weirdly responsible as a teenager.
You were, yes.
You know, I was, by the time I was 12, I was regularly babysitting for a bunch of different people. Yep. I was, you know, I knew my schedule for babysitting, and I was there when I needed to be, and I did what I had to do and everything, and I'm shocked sometimes looking back that people would trust children at the age of 12. Like, thinking about a 12-year-old now, like, just purely based on, like, our current culture, I'm sitting here going, it would have to be a really, really, really responsible 12-year-old but taking care of three of my children. But I just, even to that extent, like, as I was, you know, became a teenager, I was also very illogical in a lot of stuff.
Yeah. Yep.
And I pushed back a lot because I didn't receive a lot of logical responses to my pushing back, like stuff that I could understand and level with or whatever. But yeah, I think to an extent, as teenagers, we were all acting on a lot of emotion and just being completely illogical and irrational. So
it's really challenging out there. And I think parents do need to kind of, you know, I guess they can pick their battles.
But don't tase your kid.
But don't.
Or even joke about tasing your kid.
Or threaten or any of that.
Yeah.
Especially not associating threats of violence with being close to Jesus. Right?
Oh my
gosh. Jesus's day. Yes, that's
but
all the more reason to never tase. I just, oof, no.
Whew. Hard pass.
It's just so insane. I can't believe she did that. I can't. Like, she's going to be so embarrassed. Like,
oh my gosh.
She is now forever known as the mom who tased her kid, whether mm-hmm. she did it or not. Yep. Like, that's going to be.
That is a stain on your record.
Well, I mean, where's she going to go to church now, right? Like,
Everybody's going to be like, who's your pastor?
Well, and I mean, if she was part of a church, she has to, like, change churches, right? Like, yep. Everyone's going to know, you did what to get your kid to church? And it's hard. I get it. It's hard to get your kids to go to church.
Yeah.
But also, it's hard to get your kids to do a lot of things that are good for them. It's hard to get your kids to eat vegetables. It's hard to get
adults to do things that are sometimes, like.
Well, and I think that's part of our just, and this is more of a broader conversation about just American consumerism, and we do what we want, when we want, how we want it. Everything is catered
to us. It has to
us.
Serve us in a way that's,
yeah, I'm going to eat the foods that I like, and I'm not going to eat the foods I don't like. Mm-hmm. Doesn't matter if it's good for me or not. Mm-hmm. I'm going to, and I just, that mentality sinking into our bones a little bit as a culture, and that's really not helpful to us. It's like, and I mean, we already see it with our kids. Well, I don't like this taste, and I'm like, who at the taste wasn't the point. It's good
you
for
you.
You
want to eat food, you don't want to be hungry tonight, you don't want to wake up super super hungry tomorrow, then eat the food.
Yep. But I only want to eat the sweet thing. And it's like, yeah. And we're very, like, I think currently we're very logical. We're like, you got to balance your proteins, your carbs, and your sugars. You know, like, you got to have some balance. Otherwise, you're going to go crazy. And we can point to examples of when you went crazy.
Yep.
They still don't care. Like,
yep. They don't.
I really appreciated Joel's comment about,
that is good. Yeah.
You know, like, you've made a commitment and people are counting on you. And to me, that's a character and integrity thing. It's like, okay, you have made this commitment, so you are going to follow through on the commitment you made. Once it's over, you can be done, but you have to do this. And I think that's valid.
That's very valid, absolutely.
Challenging, though. Anyways, hey, everybody. Thanks so much for listening to this. You hate it when I say hey, everybody. Guys, I'm just really thankful you're listening. We like making this podcast. We're glad you like listening. If you want to head over to Spotify, give us 5 stars. Apple Podcasts, you can actually type up a review. That helps more people find this fun, goofy, Christian commentary content, whatever this thing that
a lot
we
of,
do is.
Mouthful of words that,
Yeah. Are you ready to send us out with the mom joke of the week?
Yes.
What do you got?
So, did you know a slice of apple pie is $2.50 in Jamaica and $3 in the Bahamas? These are the pie rates of the Caribbean.
That's so stupid.
But you laughed.
I was trying to find the joke in the first part, and I was like, what are you saying? I don't understand. What? Caribbean, Bahamas?
I
was
like, I don't want to buy pie. Don't be like pie.
Pie rates. That's fabulous.
Bye.